Afternoon. Today is Friday, March 14th, 73rd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, you know, with all these reality shows that are out there, you know, do we call you Island Boy, Swamp Monster? What do you want to go by?
Troy.
Even the boat guy. Okay.
I work on an island, but I live on a peninsula, so it's your choice.
Oh, avoiding the mainland, huh?
Yep, apparently. Okay.
There you go.
I like water.
Troy Nicolini out of the Weather Service office, Woodley Island. That's the reference for the island. The peninsula thing, that's too... Eh, nobody cares. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about the earthquake. Okay, it happened. We'll talk about the tsunami. Okay, that one didn't happen. And some of the other things that are going on in the general neighborhood and some things coming up around the corner. So, got a couple of different things to touch base on, and we'll do it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Troy Nicolini. But before we do, our quote this afternoon, let's see if we can find a weather quote. Do you think we have a weather quote in this book? There's suffering, there's travel.
Whether or not we want one.
Haven't used that before, huh? Wealth. That's the first three letters are kind of close, huh? Not close enough. We got weight. Nah, we got too much weight in this room already. We don't need to worry about that. How about wine?
Is that sure? I like wine.
Okay. Fran Lebowitz, 1981, quote, "Great people talk about ideas. Average people talk about things. Small people talk about wine." Now, for replay later on, we can do the inverse of that. Great people talk about wine. Okay. Average people talk about things. Small people talk about ideas. Now you feel better, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You just have to look in the mirror when you read the quote. You'll be all happy, happy.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing with yourself lately, Dwight?
Well, we're preparing for March 26th, Wednesday, 11 o'clock. Between 11 and noon, we're going to be conducting our annual tsunami warning test for Humboldt, Delaware, and Mendocino County. It's the big event every year for us to make sure the whole system works, but also to make sure communities and individuals feel like they're ready for the real tsunami emergency that someday we're going to get.
We've talked over the years with this, and it seems like most of the ironing out has been ironed out. And there's certainly other opportunities to get it a little bit smoother.
Well, it's true. The big things have been ironed out, but people ask, why do you keep testing every year? Once you have it ironed out, aren't you kind of done? Well, you know, a radio station might replace a crystal, for example.
Maintenance, yeah.
Maintenance. We actually just put a new transmitter on Horse Mountain, and we want to test that for the folks who live upriver of the Klamath to make sure they can find out about warnings as well. Well, as soon as we put a new transmitter and new software, things change. It's a great opportunity to make sure we didn't accidentally, you know, there's human error always, so if we accidentally coded one line wrong in the computer, this is our opportunity to make sure we got it all right. So things change.
Anybody? What's your format?
Our format?
If you got a transmitter, you got to have a format, right? If you're a radio.
I have electronic technicians that could answer that question.
Oh, it's probably like...
It's 160 some odd megahertz. Does that help?
No. I just was wondering what kind of music you're playing.
That's format. Well, we like a broad spectrum of entertainment from weather to tsunamis to flooding. You know, we're pretty open-minded.
Yeah, yeah. Not well followed, but pretty open-minded. The efforts to reach people and kind of know what's going on. Okay, I think probably most of the locals kind of get an idea. It's like, don't run to the beach when there's an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if there's a flood, don't run down to the river. And well, yeah, I mean, it's things that seem to be pretty commonplace for most of us.
for those who live around here, we feel like we're people get it. There's a great culture of understanding what an earthquake means and what to do when a tsunami is coming. And
I suppose the Bay Area is probably a little bit different.
And the LA Basin might be different again.
I'm more concerned about the Central Valley and the Rocky Mountains and the Midwest and places that there is no reference point for what these things are, what they could do, how you're supposed to react.
I mean, you mean
if you're in Kansas?
Yeah.
Hey, tidal wave. Well, that's interesting. I've never seen one of those. Let's go look.
Well, you have good intuition because in 2010, the earthquake and tsunami that struck Chile, the locals performed really well. But sadly, tourists, and these weren't necessarily tourists from out of the country. They were tourists from the interior of Chile. It's a long, skinny country, so they don't have to go very far to get in the interior. Those that were visiting on the coast from the interior of Chile, in many cases, didn't know what to do, and they accounted for the majority of the fatalities because they didn't know, for example, that an earthquake means a tsunami could be there in 10 minutes and that they should go to high ground immediately. And so many of the deaths happened to visitors. So yeah, that person from Kansas who's visiting the North Coast, when we have the real tsunami emergency, if they don't connect the earthquake to tsunami, they could be in real trouble.
You got the signs. Okay.
Yep.
But again, somebody who doesn't know what it means doesn't really know what it means. So are the signs designed kind of as a reinforcement for the locals? Because you don't have the opportunity to educate an out-of-towner.
No, that's a great question. The signs are, everybody has a sort of a different reaction to the signs. But one universal we find is that they spur conversation. Even if it's just people asking questions, what am I supposed to make of these signs? What do they mean to me? That's an opportunity for people in the community to have a conversation and figure it out for themselves as a community, or leverage, the officials and talk to the Weather Service and others in the community to find out what they mean. But it starts the conversation, so that's kind of their trigger. Sirens are really the same thing. They're a pretty good notification tool for really specific conditions. What they really do, especially when we start testing them on a monthly basis, is if you move to an area, say, from Kansas, let's say you move down to, Fields Landing and straight from Kansas, the first monthly test that comes along, you're going to go ask your neighbor, hey, what the heck did that, what's that about? I come from tornado country. Does that mean we have a tornado? And the neighbor's going to say, no, we don't have tornadoes very often, but we have this thing called a tsunami, and you need to know that if that thing goes off, you go to high ground. You're in the tsunami zone. You also need to know if you feel an earthquake, go to high ground. So I think they're really educational conversation starters more than anything.
It's interesting for me, as you're saying that, I'm interested. I'll share my interest when we come
back.
Sure,
okay.
It's 3:19.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good...
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mr. Nicolini. Troy, before the break, we were talking a little bit about earthquake, and I think everybody is probably kind of come around to the sense that, the earthquake, we had no damage. When you were talking about tsunami, I had it flash through my head. Nobody said anything. I don't know if anybody was even looking to see, did the training, has the education paid off? Were there people heading away from the beach at 10:30, or if they live on the coast, moving to the highlands automatically without being told to do it? Or did we all kind of look around and go, no damage? Isn't that interesting? And kind of look at each other.
Yeah, and that's what we ask ourselves. And this earthquake was a little bit odd, and it lasted quite a long time. People counted it between 35 and even 45 seconds.
That's what I was saying. It was over 35.
And it never really shook violently. And, you know, earthquakes are pretty rare in any one place. I'm sorry, big earthquakes and tsunamis are pretty rare in any one place, like, say, here. The last one we think was around 1700. But we learn from events around the world. And in that learning process, for example, we used to say if the earthquake is strong enough to knock you off your feet, that means there could be a tsunami coming. And then we had events around the world that taught us that it may not be that violent, but if it lasts a long time, that's kind of the really key thing to key to notice. And so now near we have this earthquake that lasts 45 seconds for some people. Honestly, probably anybody who was in the tsunami zone who felt an earthquake that lasted 45 seconds, even though it wasn't that strong, they probably should have at least begun to put their emergency plan into play. The challenging thing is it's just so hard to believe that it's really happening, especially without the violent shaking. So I'd like to share sort of the insight I give to people about how to figure out if it's the real one or not. And so there's someday if we have it and it lasts 5 minutes and there's 3 minutes of violent shaking, I don't think there'll be any doubt in anybody's mind. 3 minutes where you can't stand up.
A 3 minute earthquake?
Yeah. 3 minutes of violent shaking followed by a few more minutes of moderate shaking, right? Nobody's going to be under their table saying to themselves, I wonder if this is the one Troy was talking about. It's going to be pretty obvious.
Has there been an earthquake that has lasted
Japan,
that long?
Japan, 5 minutes.
Was a 5-minute event?
There was a video of a dorm room, a college dorm room, and there's some violent shaking. Everything comes off the shelves on the table. And then after that violent shaking, it kind of settles down, but the lamp sways forever. It's kind of freaky to see, to tell you the truth. So, yeah.
Boy, I can't think of an earthquake we've had here that I've...
No, we haven't felt it. You weren't alive.
Not even a minute.
Unless you were in Japan in 2011 and Chile in 2010 or Indonesia in 2004, you haven't felt one of those. But the point I'm making is that one's going to be a really clear case. I think everybody who's been trained is going to be like, yeah.
Even the untrained are going to figure out.
Hopefully they'll connect that it means a tsunami is coming. There's all those other ones we get that are really short, little jolts. You barely feel them, second or two at most. That's probably not going to cause a tsunami. And most people, I think, are going to be pretty comfortable making that decision. The really big question that remains is, what do you do with the ones in the middle? It's not really clearly that really, really big one, but it seems to go on for a long time. The shaking doesn't seem that violent, but you remember Troy saying, hey, if it lasts 20 or 30 or 40 seconds, you should start to think about a tsunami. So what I do with that one in the middle, Brian, is consider it a drill. Consider an opportunity for you and your family to practice doing what they would do for the real event. And that's exactly what my wife and I did on Sunday night. We basically got up, grabbed our baby, and headed for our high ground. By the time we got there, we had got the notification that there's no tsunami threat. But all it did is really reassure my wife. Every time we do a drill like that, or one where we actually just do a drill out of the blue, she just comes back feeling much more reassured that she's going to be able to get the baby, get her shoes on, find the headlight, and get to high ground in plenty of time. So there's nothing bad comes out of conducting a drill like that, as long as you're careful and you don't go running across traffic. But
was there anybody else out on the road at that time?
In Fairhaven, where we live, there were people taking steps to move towards high ground, which was really encouraging to see. I also know of one young man who hopped in his Jeep and sped away off the peninsula as fast as he could. Now, it turns out on the peninsula, we have a place to go right next to our town that's going to be safe. But if you try to drive off the peninsula, if you've ever been out there, New Navy Base Road goes right along the water for about 3 miles. And that you're going to be at that spot when the wave hits. So speeding off the peninsula is not the right reaction. So earlier you said, did people do the right thing? We had a mixed bag. We kind of always see a mixed bag. What we hope is that if we get enough people doing the right thing, the others will follow. You can get a tipping point of critical mass, and that applies to the tourists as well. We found in the campgrounds in Chile that were isolated away from the community, there was a really high mortality rate because they had no examples of the right behavior.
No mentors.
But in the campgrounds that were right next to a town, the campers saw the community members doing the right thing and followed them to the high ground. We had fewer deaths. So we really believe there's power in that. If we can get a critical mass doing the right thing, then hopefully others will follow.
It was interesting for us. We live halfway close to the station, so we're kind of the first response. Got to the truck, 3-4 minutes. No noise. No nothing. Mm-hmm. There was somebody's alarm was sounding.
Oh, so you did something.
And that was, I'm heading here.
Wow, good. Yeah, that's actually great.
No noise in town.
Yeah, of people doing things.
Anything.
Yeah.
Cars, emergency vehicles,
yeah.
The sirens.
Right.
Nothing. It was really kind of like,
Well, and we didn't pull the trigger on a tsunami warning because it was too small.
We'll talk about that threshold point.
Okay, sure, yeah.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Troy Nicolini. Troy, before the break there, we were talking about some of the different challenges that are associated with and what people are doing. Yeah, I came out here, okay, great, and you know, we had a couple things on air and you know, the feedback and a couple phone calls and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't surreal. It's kind of like on a foggy day or foggy night, mm-hmm. rather. You go out and you just don't hear anything because of the buffering.
Yeah.
That's very similar to what I was sensing as we came out. Nobody was on the road.
Yeah, you can almost picture all those people laying in bed thinking, huh, was that an earthquake? But nobody doing anything.
Well, and me, the most bizarre thing was driving by a couple of grocery stores and there were no owners checking things out.
Yeah.
Or the rest. It was like everybody went, oh, that was interesting, kind of fun. Where do I ride that roller coaster one more time? Almost a non-event from the start.
Yeah, and this was big enough to knock some product off shelves. My wife has a small retail business, and I went the next morning, and there were things on the ground. No significant damage like there was the last time we had a 6.5 locally. But, yeah, it was enough to, I think, knock a few things over. But we didn't get any reports of any significant damage anywhere in the region. So
you were talking about with the warnings, and you have an event like that, what you guys went through. You being professional guys,
right?
What you did or didn't do, and why you did or didn't do it.
Yeah, the minute that lit off, we have folks 24/7 up in Palmer, Alaska. That's where our National Tsunami Warning Center is, and they monitored it and they looked at its location, its magnitude, and made a judgment call to just pause for a second to see earthquakes. Initial magnitudes often adjust up or down as time goes on. It was right on the fence about triggering a warning, so they just waited long enough to see that the next estimate of the magnitude dropped it below the threshold. And based on where the earthquake was, they just made a judgment call that it wasn't worthy of turning everything on. Everything being interrupting your radio station and all the other TV radio stations, turning on the sirens, turning on people's no-weather radios. So we didn't do that for this event, and it looks like it was the right decision because there was no tsunami. But it's a really tough call for those ones that are so close because there's not a whole lot of time between when the earthquake happens and the wave arrives.
If I'm sitting there looking over your shoulder, I see a 6.9, let's say, off Juneau.
Yeah.
You know, considering there's not a lot of places to go and there's enough flat land along the coastal areas, you know, if you're going to err, which way you want to err?
Well, in our...
Engage, yeah. And then we can always call it off 10 minutes later.
Well, and the thing is, our thresholds are already really conservative and cautious anyway. So when I say he hesitated for a second, there was in no way was he, you know, jeopardizing safety of anybody because those thresholds are so cautious to be.
So knowing that you are an earthquake expert, any idea why this thing didn't trigger a tsunami? I mean, certainly we can't say it's too far off the coast because we had the situation in Japan.
Oh, I can answer that question. I was about ready to correct you that I'm not an earthquake expert. But so this was a strike slip. This doesn't seem to put any signature of tsunami in any of our instruments around this region. And that seems reasonable because basically it was the two chunks of the crust moving side by side along each other. So they were sliding in the same plane, but no vertical movement to speak of, right? The kind that produces earthquake is the kind where you actually have some chunk of land lifting up under the seafloor. Just like if you're
it's like the propulsion.
Yeah, it's like if you're in the bathtub with, you know, and you lift your hands underwater, you'll set a wave in motion. So there was none of that movement. We do have that kind of fault nearby, and that's the one we watch and we're concerned about.
The triple junction?
The triple junction is where we actually have a big two big strike slips that meet our subduction zone. And the subduction zone for us starts around Cape Mendocino. It runs all the way up our coast, Oregon, Washington, and up to Vancouver Island. And that's our big subduction zone, where one plate's going under the other and dragging it down. And at some point, that one that's being dragged down says, I've had enough, and it snaps up. And that's what causes the big tsunami. So,
does that correspond to the placement of some of the buoys?
That's a great question. The buoys that are on our coast for detecting tsunamis really won't provide much value to us. If we have our subduction zone earthquake off our coast, the wave is going to get here in 10 or 15 minutes. There's really no time for the buoy to pick it up, to send that to Palmer to evaluate it, run their computer models, and get back to us. They're going to, first of all, just go based on the magnitude and start issuing warnings if it's, say, a 9.0. But secondly, they couldn't do all that before the wave got here anyway. So what the buoys are for that are off our coast is to provide a better estimate of what's going to happen to Japan, Hawaii, and Alaska
going out
across the Pacific. Yeah, so it's the buoys out in front of Japan, for example, that in 2011 that very quickly picked up the actual tsunami that happened and provided our folks in Palmer the data they needed to run their computer models to predict when it was going to hit our coast and how big it was going to be. So that's the value of the buoys. They're for helping the folks out across the ocean.
Do they? But they also measure surges and sea swells and all that other kind of stuff too, don't they? Just on a more minor basis?
It's amazing how the buoys work. So the ones that measure regular waves that we have from storms and from the wind are not the kind that can measure tsunamis, because in the deep water, they're sort of, you can't see them in the data when you have these other waves. Because really what happens is the entire ocean sort of lifts up a little bit when the tsunami passes, right? So the regular buoy wouldn't pick it up.
So it just rises with it, and the references rise.
Exactly. It just thinks there's another little wind wave coming by. So tsunami buoys have sensors on the bottom of the seafloor that detect the pressure change as that elevated water goes by. So that's how the tsunami sensors pick up a tsunami, which is very different than the wave buoys.
More like a rubber band stretch?
Yeah.
When it goes up?
Yeah, exactly. So,
are there other buoys? I mean, we hear about some of the cutbacks with the feds and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys don't have quite all the budget that you would like to have for some of these things.
Right.
If there was an opportunity, are there some holes that are out there that would really prove to be beneficial in monitoring some of these
things?
Well,
you can't find an oceanographer or a meteorologist who won't tell you they need more data. Yeah. There was an expansion of the tsunami buoy network, which has been really helpful. But if you look back at the 2000, now they start to bleed together, you know, but I think it was the 2010.
Let's just say a couple years ago.
A couple years ago, yeah. At the event that was off the coast of Samoa, not our Samoa, but the Samoa down on the other side of the Pacific, the main energy of that tsunami kind of went by Hawaii, but sort of missed the main buoy. And so we had a little bit of uncertainty about how big that was going to be. And it was, if you recall, it was estimated to be here like 7:30 in the morning. And I remember going to bed at night and hearing the report that, yeah, it sort of missed all of our buoys, but we're pretty sure it's going to be this big. And I mean, you know.
For my buddy in Pango,
yeah,
it was about 1.5 floors.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, it did arrive.
Fortunately, on our coast, it had a lot of ocean to kind of flatten out, but there was some uncertainty. So, yeah, you could always use more instruments to know with greater certainty, but they're very expensive to maintain. So
the weird topography of the floor of the Pacific Ocean, does that accelerate? Does it decelerate? Does it compress or expand the impact when these things do hit?
No, totally. They can sort of focus the energy in certain areas and dissipate the energy in other areas, and it happens at different scales. So if you look at the 2011 event, in fact, there are some underwater seamounts kind of in the middle of the North Pacific.
You're like a mountain?
Yeah, but it doesn't pierce the water surface.
Underwater mountain,
yeah. Thank you.
Simple. Remember, you're dealing with ownership.
You're a genius.
Simple stuff.
You're a genius of words. Yeah. I just couldn't think how to describe a mountain underwater. Yeah. Well, it actually had the effect of, it's kind of like if you have the hose going and you hit something with it, the water splatters. Like if you take a hose and you're trying to, and you accidentally catch the corner of something, the water splatters, right? Well, the wave energy hit those and scattered and caused the focusing of some of that energy to go right towards northwestern California. So it's even a feature in the middle of the Pacific can have an effect on where the energy actually lands at the end of the day. And then once you get to the coast, there can be effects of the seafloor that cause the wave energy to kind of bend around and hit one area more so than others. And so, for example, Crescent City and Santa Cruz have something in common, the way they're sort of in the northern part of
exposed, in the northern part
of kind of a crescent-shaped bay, and that tends to resonate energy up and hit those areas harder.
So it's not anybody mad at those two communities.
No.
It just is what's going on.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, he says. 3:43, we'll be back with more from Troy Nicolini.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 347, final segment of the week. We got Troy Nicolini with us this afternoon. Troy, again, the test for the systems test, I guess, is the biggest thing. It's happening later on this month. Is the general public going to be aware of anything? Are we going to hear that stuff, or is this kind of behind the scenes, the making sausage part of the program?
Well, no, on March 26th, 11 at noon, we're going to interrupt all TV and radio stations, including KINS. We'll be turning on all the outdoor sirens in Humboldt, Delmar, Mendocino County. We'll be using reverse calling in Humboldt County, for example. People will get a 911 the night before, a reverse 911 call, letting them know about the test the night before. We should have Civil Air Patrol planes with a public address system announcing that it's a test.
Isn't that kind of 1950s?
You know, it still has great value, especially for us, because we have these big, long recreational areas called beaches where it's really hard to notify people out on beaches, and a plane is very easy and very effective. So people will see all these things going on. The key thing is to know it's a drill. Don't evacuate. You don't need to. Provide feedback and use it as an opportunity to practice your individual, your family, or your community tsunami emergency plan.
So if you see Troy the Island Boy out on the beach, he's there working?
Yes,
is that
always.
Kind of the
absolutely.
Message underlying?
Sure,
the
absolutely,
thing?
Yeah.
If somebody wants to get a little bit more information or kind of get their hands around this a little bit, I know you guys did a ton of outreach when you were trying to figure out what the signs were going to look like or where they were going to be placed and how the sirens would sound and all that kind of stuff. It's been a couple of years. If somebody's looking, is this the stuff that you can find on the website?
Yeah, weather.gov/Eureka, or they can Facebook the Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group.
You know, anything considering that there might be pictures of you or I on it.
Yeah.
It would probably be a little frightening for folks.
Won't be any of those.
Okay, good. And if you don't remember that, you can go through just the Weather Service, the regular NOAA site.
Yep, or just
find it or link
call
off
us.
Of us and
call us.
Find you and all that.
You can ask for Troy. 443-6484. Ask for Troy.
And you might even be there?
Oh, no, I'll answer the phone.
Oh.
Or I'll be reachable.
Well, for some people, you answer the phone. Not
always
everybody.
Always for you, Brian.
Yeah.
No, we answer the phone from the public.
Oh, everybody.
24/7.
You.
Oh, well.
You.
I might be over at KINS talking to you. So
That's always a possibility. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See, it wasn't that bad, was it?
No, it was great. Yeah, you were.
And then you said you weren't an earthquake expert.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said about these. What does it mean that we have all these small ones that happened afterwards?
All these big dots. Yeah, okay. And we didn't even talk about Geyserville. Join us Monday afternoon. A lot of earthquakes. Geyserville.
Oh, yeah.
Relax. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow morning.